First time, long time, giddy on up. I'm Smitty. We got Roan. We got producers Booze and John Kelly. And we also have an outright apocalyptic circumstance that continues to basically bleed the life out of every alive soul in the Philadelphia area. And that is who the fuck is going to take Carson Wentz off the Philadelphia Eagles' hands? Because by all reports, it's supposed to happen, but it hasn't. And we'll go through those reports, whether they're real, false, or just imaginary leaks that Howie Roseman throws out to the media, which are happening, by the way, at a rate that is embarrassing to every single media person and individual in the Philadelphia area who basically just wants a straight answer from this organization, but continues to be told that it's raining and getting a golden shower on everyone's faces. Roan, makes some sense, por favor.
So it happened so fast. Just last week, we were talking about, can maybe the Eagles get a first-round pick for Carson Wentz? And then by Friday, it seemed like they were about to get two first-round picks for Carson Wentz, and everything looked incredible in the world. Like, were we going to get Tariq Cohen? Are we going to bring back Nick Foles from the Bears and a first-round pick for Carson Wentz? And I honestly was living in the reality that that might happen before the Super Bowl, it felt like. It didn't wind up happening. And as we step back a little bit, it seems like it's really that first wave of reports was Howie Roseman trying to drum up as much interest and make it seem as appealing as possible for someone to try and trade for Carson Wentz. Like, there actually was a legitimate trade market for Carson Wentz. Then we didn't see anything happen. There was a chasm of inactivity. It bubbled up that the Colts might be a little bit more in the mix than the Bears. Maybe it was a two-team bidding war. Then we heard other teams had gotten into the mix. But now we're seeing those offers of multiple first-round picks come crashing back to reality. Maybe it's a first-round pick. Maybe it's not even a first-round pick. But it seems like it's so obvious that they want to trade him that Carson Wentz's time in Philadelphia is done.
There's a couple things that go through my head. First of all, I'm becoming sadly apathetic to the situation because I just don't know who or what to believe that's out there. I mean, you've had, like you said, reports last week that a trade was imminent, that Monday or Tuesday after the Super Bowl, it was definitely going to happen, specifically to the Colts, Bears, or some random team that just doesn't want to be identified. Wonder why Howie threw that one out there. And then absolutely nothing. And it's to the point where it's being reported today that the Bears are becoming very impatient. Apparently the Colts offered 2 second rounders for Wentz. Howie rejected that. And the Bears came back over the top with a slightly better offer. I don't even know what Natalie Engeloff reported with Tariq Foles and a first rounder was true, because if that was true, I think Howie's taken that on the spot. And now the Bears are getting impatient to the point that they want to figure this shit out, because Matt Nagy and the GM Pace, they're on the hot seat. They want to decide something going into free agency to see what they have to work with, to see what cap numbers they have to deal with. And if they, for some reason, pull out, or if somebody gets Deshaun Watson, or there's another option on the table for the Colts or Bears, the Eagles are basically left with their dicks in their hands. Because all the value, everything that Howie's trying to drum up, it's gone. It's kaput. So, like, what's going on? And another thing is, there is no real rush for Carson Wentz to get traded, because he's not owed that bonus until March 13th or so. But something's got to give where you get value. And I just don't know who or what to believe or how it's going down. And I'm apathetic, Roan. I'm apathetic.
I think that you hit the nail on the head with one phrase, and that was dick in hand. We are just sitting here with our fucking dicks in our hand. And my nightmare scenario, the doomsday scenario, is that we sit with our dicks in our hands so fucking long that everybody else fucking gets their dicks fucking handed off to somebody else, and we go into next season dick in hand. Carson Wentz is still on the roster. Our fractured fucking locker room is carrying an albatross cap hit, and a new coach who can't deal with two personalities who fucking, frankly, one of them doesn't like him. Carson Wentz obviously doesn't like him. He would have said something if he actually liked him or was going to buy into this. And so we acted like we had leverage at the beginning of this, like that we were going to get some kind of Matt Stafford grandfather offer, when reality is that's probably not going to happen. And honestly, I would probably take the 2 second round picks.
Oh, because yeah.
The Eagles have too many holes right now, where we need at least 4 picks in the first 3 rounds, because we need to get better at receiver or have some kind of weapon. We need better D-line help. We need linebacker help. We need safety help. We need cornerback help. I mean, there's too many holes. We need to start getting the best offer that's on the table so we can have this stable draft pick so we can start rebuilding something.
And you mentioned Wentz not liking Nick Sirianni. It was reported. Now, however true this is, I don't know, because it seems unfucking believable, but it was reported that Wentz is on a talking relationship, a fine, fair relationship with Jeffrey Lurie, with Nick Sirianni, with the players. The only person he has completely ghosted in his life from the Eagles organization is Howie Roseman. He's not answering a single call from Howie Roseman, allegedly. And for a quarterback to be that petty, and for a general manager to be that dickish for this situation to happen is absolutely unbelievable. If it's true. But the sad thing is, I can 100% see it being true. Carson Wentz is that petty. If he wasn't, he would have said something since the offseason, since he got benched. Howie Roseman is that much of a dick. He ousted Joe Banner. This is his 4th coaching regime in the last 7 years. He has had problems with everybody. Him and Zach Ertz went at it on the field last season in front of the entire team. So I can see that situation absolutely happening. And it's mind-boggling that it has come to this point for an organization that is valued at $3.4 billion. How does that happen?
But here's my question. Do you blame – I mean, yes, he's being petty, but do you blame Carson Wentz for just completely ghosting Howie Roseman like this? I mean, the guy treated him like a ball of shit after paying him all this money, gave him the keys to the car, and then didn't let him drive it.
I tweeted out in jest that if you blatantly miss on 2 comically wrong wide receivers and draft your backup – after giving that contract, yeah, I'd be a little pissed too. But in reality, Carson is confirmed just from not speaking out in general. He's confirmed in my mind to just be a big fucking baby.
Yeah, because at the end of the day, some of this does fall on the guy who you paid all the money to.
Yeah.
Like you gave him the money, but like at the end of the day, he needs to give you something back for that money. There needs to be some kind of transaction involved, because if you're just paying him and then fucking you're blaming yourself for not giving him like the chance to succeed long enough. His chance to succeed was that fat fucking signing bonus that they gave him up front. He wasn't on like a Kirk Cousins deal where it was prove it every single year. It was all, there was tons of money in the signing bonus. Like
$70 million yeah. Guaranteed. $70 million.
He had been given the vote of confidence. He had to do more with it. I mean, I don't really have like patience for hearing that Carson Wentz doesn't get along perfectly. I don't want to hear shit about him having a bad attitude. You have to have a good attitude when you're getting paid $100+ million. You just have to do it. It's just that simple. You really have to at the end of the day. You have to be like the fucking happiest guy in the world.
There's this bullshit sentiment going around too, that like Eagles fans are being too hard on Carson. It's like, this guy, if there's 50 quarterbacks in the league, he'd be 52. He played that poorly. I don't think it's this case of we're running this guy out of town just like we do every other athlete. I think that's unfair. That's some bullshit. Some outside reporters.
If anything, we're giving guys like Carson Wentz and other superstars in this city too much benefit of the doubt. We fucking held Markelle Fultz's balls while he pissed and fucked till the day he was traded. We gave him every single chance on earth. So fuck anybody for saying that we're just running people out of town. No, that's a complete opposite stance.
Yeah, I think that we have the right to be upset with some of the people. And I think one of the people we have a right to be upset with is Howie Roseman. And I don't think that I just don't have the energy to be throwing my hate behind Howie Roseman every single fucking week. Like I at some point, like I need to accept that he's going to be at the GM for at least another year and hope that he's making good decisions. Like I just need to hope that that there is going to be some kind of good decision in there or some kind of learning process from his mistakes. Like I just need to believe that because like, I just can't, I'll fucking drive myself crazy if I just blame this dude every single week.
On that thought process, I did a little self-reflection on my loathing for Howie Roseman. And you know, there are people out there that you just can't convince anybody they're doing a single good thing, even though there probably are. Nobody is perfect, but nobody is like that bad. Hey, nobody's Hitler out there. Not comparing anybody to Hitler, but like, you know how some people out there would just trash Barack Obama, say he's the worst, he never did anything right. But then you say, well, he was president when they killed Osama bin Laden. They're like, okay, yeah, he did that right. There's like one objectively good thing that you can find out of anybody. And I went back and tried to find that one Osama bin Laden death objectively great thing that Howie Roseman has done since the Super Bowl. And here's what I found. I broke it into three categories: drafting, free agency, and waiver wire pickups, practice squad. Drafting. Now, granted, zero Pro Bowlers in the last 7 years besides Carson Wentz. That's almost impossible to do. But in the past 3 years, he has drafted Miles Sanders. These are just wins in my mind. Miles Sanders, Jack Driscoll, who I think is going to be a fine player, Dallas Goedert in the second round, and Jordan Mailata in the seventh round. Those are confirmed wins. Andre Dillard still juries out, even though his time is like getting really close. And Avante Maddox, maybe fine player. Okay, so five decent players out of like 24 picks. Does that make up for his drastic misses of not picking Justin Jefferson, of J.J. Arcega-Whiteside, of the Jalen Hurts situation? I don't know, but okay players. Free agency. Javon Hargrave, Malik Jackson, Darius Slay. I'm okay with them. I'm okay with all three of them. Now, practice. Now, does that equal out the contracts he's given of Carson Wentz, Alshon Jeffries, and where the fuck goes on quarter to quarter with Jason Peters? I don't know. Who's to say? And practice squad and waiver wire pickups. You got Travis Fulgham, Greg Ward, and Alex Singleton. Three fine to possibly above average players that Travis Fulgham, if he's actually given time to sniff the field, could probably be somebody. Alex Singleton could be a decent linebacker, and Greg Ward would be a perfect fifth wide receiver on a playoff team, and that's fine. But does that outweigh them just outright releasing Rasul Douglas when they needed help in the secondary, who went on to have a great year for the Carolina Panthers, and guys like LJ Fort when they had zero linebackers on the team, and LJ Fort just gets cut and goes to the Ravens, and he's revered there. He's like one of their best players. Like I'm trying to find that one moment. I'm trying to find that one thing since the Super Bowl Howie Roseman has just like done right where I can give him credit. And like out of everything that I mentioned, there's like a couple things you feel good about, but it just doesn't. The bad outweighs the good so much.
So Smitty, as I'm thinking about what you just laid out there, which was a beautiful job of laying it out, and I think that I noticed two things that he seems like he's good at and that the Eagles management is good at, and two things that they're not good at. Two things that they're good at: one is finding guys at the back of the draft, undrafted free agents, and guys to fill out their practice squad. They're guys that Alex Singleton's, Greg Ward's, Boston Scott's, guys who can rise throughout the organizations. And two is finding talent throughout the rest of the league. So guys like Alshon Jeffrey, when we brought him in, Jay Ajayi, when we brought him in, the guy, Hargrave, Jackson, Slay, all those guys, we identified good free agents, other good like trade prospects, and brought them in towards our team. Things that he's super terrible at are drafting guys at the beginning of the draft, realizing who the guy to get in the first round is. he has not been able to do that. I don't know if it's too many cooks or what the fuck the problem is, but he has not been able to draft well at the top couple rounds of the draft, consistently hitting on draft picks like other organizations. Look at the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, first three rounders. All those guys are playing in the Super Bowl. That would be really helpful. Another thing that he is terrible at is learning how to manage the guys who are already on the team and being too loyal to players who are already on the team. The Alshon Jeffrey contract, coming back to Deshaun Jackson and giving him all that money, all this sinking money into players because they were on the Super Bowl one time, or like we have some kind of fucking long lasting relationship with them. All of that has been a massive problem with Howie Roseman. He doesn't know when to say goodbye. He doesn't know how to break up with somebody. He doesn't know when to move on. So there are good things that he's doing, but the bad things are the fucking things that are weights around our ankles that are keeping us from being able to ascend as a franchise.
It's a mess, boys. It's a mess. The house is on fire. It's burning to the ground, and the person trying to put it out is the arsonist that made it explode in the first place. And even more so, I hate that the owner of the freaking house is giving credit to said arsonist for putting out the fire. It's about accountability, Jeffrey Lurie. It is about accountability. And you just keep giving this guy matches and gasoline like he's a fucking child, and he's burning your house to the ground.
It's a fact. No, it's a fact. You have the right to be fired up. I just want this trade to happen. Honestly, where I'm at is I'm just checking my phone every fucking 15 minutes to see, have they made this trade yet? Has it happened? So I can just move on mentally and start preparing for the next level of whatever this is going to be, because this purgatory shit is not it.
One of two things is going to happen, in my opinion. Either the Bears or Colts or somebody's going to panic, and how he is going to get is at least one first rounder. I don't think it's going to be much more than that, but either that's going to happen, or we're going to be on March 13th and he's going to take a sixth rounder for Wentz.
Now, wait a minute.
There's no way in my mind Wentz is going to be on this team.
Now hold on. Say how he doesn't, because think about it. Like, yes, Wentz wants out. Yes. It might not look good if he stays, but the Eagles really don't have to trade him if they don't like the deal. So what happens if Carson Wentz is on the team next year? What happens?
It's already ashes and they're pissing on the entire house.
The quarterback competition, like, how is a quarterback competition going to go? Because whoever wins it has the shortest leash ever. There's obviously going to be some favoritism for Jalen Hurts, because Jalen Hurts is communicating with the coaching staff. It's like that gives him a leg up in a quarterback competition. I don't even think Carson Wentz wants any parts of that quarterback competition. He's like, this is your new toy? Fine. Go play with your new toy. I'm going to another city. I'm fucking leaving here.
And at that point, I don't see if it happens, which I don't see it happening. Why wouldn't they just play Carson Wentz and just either let him destroy himself or up his trade value in some way possible? Maybe they can dish him off in preseason. I just don't see how that's possible. That the hole was already dug, and there's no way getting out of it. It's halfway to freaking China.
It would be nice if there was a situation where we could kind of hold on to him and see who gets like injured, or like find out who needs a quarterback that didn't think they were going to need a quarterback, or something along those lines. But because of the way that his contract is structured, if we hold on to him, we're like super on the hook for him. So it's like something has to happen within the next 30 days, or who knows.
Is there something to be said about waiting for the draft, and maybe Howie's waiting for, you know, some of these rookie quarterbacks to get picked apart? I don't know if we're going to have like a traditional combine, but like you said, the roster bonus is occurring before the draft, right? So he can't wait for the draft to maybe one team panics and offers you more. I think at that point, like Ron said, you're already on the hook for too much money.
Yeah, he's borderline untradeable now. After March 13th, he becomes that much harder to get rid of. And that's not even – like, Zach Ertz is still in the books for two more years. He's not coming back next year. Like, they're going to get rid of him for something. And then you got the draft, in which Howie is still in charge of. I mean, I cannot see a situation where Howie objectively has a good draft and anybody likes it, because you're just going to question it no matter what. You're just going to question his track
record. There was an NJ.com article where they suggested that there was another player on the Eagles that was going to be included in maybe one of the packages to the Colts, an undisclosed player who was suggested to be in the package. Is there anybody on the Eagles roster that you even think is like off limits that you just wouldn't trade?
No. No, I think
is there anybody?
Miles Sanders, maybe, because he's really your only. I mean, he's pretty much the only bright spot. That would be tradable. That would be worth anything.
I would like. Well, I mean, you can trade Fletcher Cox right now for some sort of
value. Yeah.
And as much as I don't want to see Cox absolutely slaying wives in other cities, but like I can be okay with it happening if you get value, because they're not going to be winning. And these guys, him, Brandon Graham, they're you know, on the wrong side of 30. Like, what's the point of keeping them around? Brandon Brooks, if you can get value for him, he's off injured. I wouldn't like to see them trade Lane, because he is, when healthy, one of the best starting tackles in the NFL. So like, you could rebuild around him without having to like bring in somebody else or a draft pick, but everything and everybody would be up for grabs.
Isn't that kind of sad that there's the entire roster is up for grabs? Isn't that kind of fucking depressing? Isn't that almost kind of an indictment of how the roster is built, that there you have nothing to hang on to? Having options of draft picks would be better than everything you have.
Yeah, literally everything. Because even Miles Sanders, sure, he's definitely approaching his prime and is certainly fresh after getting 10 carries a game for the last 2 years. How long is he going to be willing to wait through a rebuild? Like 3 years from now, he might not be in his prime anymore. So
might not be trade everybody. Trade everybody. Fucking get, let's get 100 picks in this draft.
Yeah, 100 picks.
All rookies.
Now he can get one Pro Bowler.
Maybe.
Yeah,
maybe. He'd still find a way to miss.
Let's get into actually something worth living for, and that is your Philadelphia 76ers, who are 14-0 when Ben Simmons, Green, Seth Curry, Joel Embiid, and Tobias Harris start. 14-0, number one team in the East, whooping up on Sacramento last night. More importantly, I don't care if Durant was out or not. Actually, I do care a little bit. More importantly, beating up on the Brooklyn Nets Saturday night. Yeah, they had a little off evening against the Portland Trailblazers at home, but Ben Simmons wasn't playing. And I think that game, among everything else, kind of gave the fans and Ben Simmons haters a little bit of a reason to shut up about Ben Simmons, because you saw just how much of an impact he actually has when he's not there on the court.
Yeah, he pairs beautifully at the top of the key on defense, no matter who he's with. He makes them an elite defensive team, and he doesn't have to be a good three-point shooter to make them an elite three-point shooting team, because the gravity that he creates, like the statistics show it fucking pretty plainly, that the Sixers are way better at three-point shooting with Ben Simmons on the floor. And it's awesome. It's awesome to watch. Even just looking at the top of the standings, it's like us, 1.5 games, Milwaukee, and then the Nets, and then the Celtics, and then the Pacers, and all those teams are fucking hovering 1.5 games above 500. Like, we're clearing away the best team in the East. So I'm going to pose a question to you fellas. Who of those teams scares you the most? Because you said the Nets, they didn't have Durant in that game. They didn't have Kyrie in that game either. That's a spooky squad. When you have all three of those guys together, I still like our matchup, but having three superstars is always terrifying. The Celtics have always been the bane of our existence, and their two young superstars are, outside of our two young superstars, one of the best pairings in the game. And then you look at the Bucks, and it was supposed to be the Bucks. It was supposed to be Giannis last year and this year, but I mean, does Giannis scare you? He'd really have to turn it on, and they haven't really put it together with Jrue Holiday. So which of those teams do you think is the scariest?
I think the Nets will be the scariest, because if you get those three healthy and cooking, and if they want to win, they're going to put everything in their power to win. Celtics, if the Sixers are healthy, nobody is stopping Embiid, especially on that team. You just can't. And the Sixers historically haven't done too shabby against Giannis and the Bucks. So they really don't scare me when it comes down to it, if everybody is healthy. I mean, that's the biggest thing. Like, I would borderline bench Embiid and Simmons and even Tobias at this point, like, once every four games. I just would. And sacrifice maybe the number one seed. I just would. If you could end the season today for the Sixers and it would guarantee them the eighth seed, like, I would, just to maintain everybody's health, wellness, and prosperity, because they're playing great, so good together right now, that just like one little tweak in that, in how they're doing things right now, like, scares the shit out of me, because they're so perfect the way they are right now.
Yeah, I love the way that they've been even coached. Like, last night they play against the Kings, and the Kings are kind of good. Like, the Kings are like sneakily, like, they have some nice young talent on their team, and the Kings play super fast. And I think under Brett Brown, we would try to counter their fast play with a slowed down pace. And we would try to be like, all right, you guys are going to go fast. Well, we're just going to play our game. But Doc Rivers was like, fuck it. You guys are going to go fast. We're going to try and go fast. And we were flying up and down the court. We scored like 40 points in the first quarter. And we were giving up a lot of points. But at the same time, though, we can play at different speeds. And we can tailor our the way that we play two different teams. And that makes me think that we might be able to weather little bits of storm. But Smitty, I'm on the same page as you in that I'm fucking terrified of someone getting hurt. I'm terrified of an injury, because it just feels so good and so perfect. And I just would hate for this team to have to fight against those odds. Like, they deserve, how well they're playing, they deserve to be able to play at full strength. They deserve to have the NBA see what this team has built and to give everybody their best shot. The fucking Lakers are playing with AD and fucking LeBron. We deserve to have our two best guys. We deserve to have the full, the full lay of the land and have everybody healthy.
Hey, all the credit in the world to Doc Rivers and Morey for putting this team together. Last night, even saw it, 42 points in the first. They're up by like 7 or 10. And then in the second, they actually some way, somehow were trailing by like 5 going into halftime. And the past couple of years, I see them losing that game, especially like being around tied going into the fourth quarter. They clamp down in the fourth. They find ways to win against the Lakers. They found ways to win against the Nets. They found ways to win against the Celtics. Yeah, they didn't have Tatum, but they found ways to win in the end. And just don't get injured. Just please don't get injured. That's all I ask. Joel Embiid was plus 4,000 MVP heading into this year. I believe he's like around plus 600, 550 right now still. It's between the odds books, him, LeBron, Jokic, and Doncic, pretty much top four. Who are you taking right now for MVP?
I went down to the Barstool Sportsbook. I went down to the Barstool Sportsbook in Philly, and I got in on Embiid as MVP. I got in on Sixers coming out of the East, and I got on the Sixers to win the championship. I feel that good about everything. I feel fantastic about everything. Like, it's why not? If this season I want to put my money where my mouth is, I want to get in the fucking mix. Like, I feel as good this season as I've ever felt about a fucking Sixers team, period. Like, that's as I've felt as good. I want to be along for the ride in every way possible. I want to be in fucking mentally, spiritually, and financially. So I went through some bets down, and we're doing it. I might fucking go down and throw, I might double down on fucking worse odds. The odds are going to get worse every day. Everybody's going to get fucking wise to how good we are. We're sick.
I was thinking about I'm taking a responsible break right now, but when I get back, I will be putting money down on Embiid MVP. And I thought his odds would be a little bit higher, and I took a look at everyone else's stats. LeBron's still having a pretty good year, and Jokic, good God, that guy's just a stats machine. He put up like 15 and 10 the other night. I didn't realize just how consistently baller that Serbian is.
Yeah, he's a beast. And I think that I think that it comes down to how well the Sixers play at the end of the year. If the Sixers are far and away the best team in the East, Embiid is going to win the award because they have a little bit of LeBron fatigue. They like to see someone new kind of rise up. We've seen that in MVP voting. And in the West, like, the Jazz are better than – like, the Jazz have the best record in the West, and they don't have necessarily a clear-cut MVP on their team. I think if the Sixers run away with the East, the voters will want to give it to Embiid. That's what I'm banking on. But he's also – he is the MVP. He's fucking incredible.
He definitely is, more so because if you take him off the team, the Sixers are below 500.
Not below.
I don't know. They're pretty close.
No.
Well, this year they definitely are in games he hasn't played. They're, what, 1-4?
Are they?
Yeah. They're not good. They're not good at being on the floor.
Yo, quick note on Brooklyn Nets. I follow Frank the Tank on Twitter, and my view of the Nets is extremely skewed now. He tweeted last night, well, another loss for the Nets to a shit team out of the playoffs. I looked it up. It was the second quarter, and they were down by like 4. So I have no clue. But I agree with Frank. I don't know what we're going to get out of the Nets. I don't know where they're going to be at the end of the year. I'm not worried about the Nets. I'm with you, Ron. I'm all Team Sixers right now. Put your money where your mouth is.
Now, do you see Morey making any moves at the deadline just to maybe combat the risk of a Ben Simmons or Joel Embiid, God forbid, getting hurt? And if so, what would that move be?
We discussed this last week. If he makes any moves, he just better make sure he's not giving anything up for it.
Yeah, buyouts. Buyout guys. Guys that get bought out of their contracts, maybe someone who's traded for some draft pick, and then their new team isn't going to make the playoffs, so they buy him out or something. I want somebody that we're going to get on the cheap, and we're not giving up something in the future. Because I like the roster composition right now. There's no reason to fucking tinker just to tinker. Leave well enough alone or whatever the fuck that saying is.
Right, the starting five, we mentioned 14-0, but even guys like Shake Furkan's playing. He's frustrating to watch shoot sometimes, but Furkan's playing.
He was dunking last night. Furkan was dunking last night.
I mean, that Portland game, I mean, granted, this is why I'm taking a responsible break. I had Shake Milton like over 12.5 points. Of course, he got 12 because Furkan, for some reason, was playing fucking 38 minutes chucking. But between Furkan, Shake, Dwight Howard, and Maxey off the bench, like maybe, my opinion, if you could bring in someone who can really be a game-changing six-man or borderline starter and give up like Maxey, like it would need to be someone extreme like a Kevin Love, I'd still be willing to do that. But other than that, they better not trade anybody.
Let Maxey grow. Leave Maxey alone.
Stop trying
to throw at Maxey.
How safe is Maxey being, you know, could he be traded? Because I know he's been mentioned a few times, like when the James Harden shit was all going down, Maxey's name was thrown in there a couple of times. How safe is he on this roster? Because I love him.
Yeah,
I love him too.
But I mean, you have to get somebody who is going to make an extreme impact right away. But trade of the offseason for any team, hard to argue against Seth Curry for Jason Richardson for the Sixers right now. He is shooting above 50% from the field. He's shooting above 50% from three-pointers. He's shooting freaking 100% from the free throw line, bro. How is that possible? Yeah,
remember the first week when he like missed like 3 threes in like 2 games and people were like, see, like even Philly could ruin Seth Curry. It's like, no, shut up. You don't know what the fuck you're talking about. He's incredible. He fucking is exactly who we thought he was. I mean, it shows how genius Daryl Morey is, just being like, he came in like fucking Marie Kondo. He just looked at the room and was like, we need to change that. We need to change that. And fucking change the shit real fucking fast. And it was perfect. Like the feng shui, you walked in and it was like a whole new room. It was like bright and fucking wide open. And fucking Seth Curry's splashing threes and Danny Green's D'ing up and the fucking futon looks beautiful. I can't say how much I admire that man.
Exactly. And he did it without tearing down the infrastructure of the entire place and while still keeping the freaking futon. It looks beautiful in that.
It looks incredible.
All right, Booze, let's get to the voicemails.
What's up, guys? I think I actually got disconnected. My name is Luke Stansfield. I write for Fourth and John. We're a column that kind of covers some Eagle stuff. We started off as a tailgate place, but now we do a little bit of other things. I wrote an article today about the five steps that led to the breakup between Carson Wentz and the Eagles, and I'd like to know what you guys think about it. The first one is the absence of Frank Reich. Then the second one is Carson Wentz's injuries. Third, it's Howie Roseman's roster management and talent acquisition. Fourth is drafting Jalen Hurts. And then fifth is the final fight before the divorce, and it's the 2020 season. I would like to see what you guys feel about those 5 points.
Fourth and John, great stuff. Go check them out. I don't disagree with any of them 5 points. I'm trying to think if there's anything to be added. John DeFilippo leaving, I think, hurt a little bit, but then again, that's only because he was there for a season after Frank Wright, and Frank Wright was like good cop, or Filippo was bad cop. I think they worked well together, but I think those 5 points pretty on point.
I think that one you have to kind of add in there is just the fracturing of the relationship with Doug Peterson. And I don't think that that was just the 2020 thing. I think that they have had like a slow but like precipitous fallout between them. I think that that has kind of come over time. And I think that the trust has kind of eroded. And I don't think that you even get to his point of Jalen Hurts being drafted if there isn't like a lack of trust between those two guys. And I guess it's fostered through the Nick Foles situation, and I guess that bred some insecurity in Carson Wentz. But at the same time, as I said before, I don't really have that much patience for like nursing someone's insecurity if they're getting paid $130 million. So I think that there's like an erosion in that relationship, and I don't know if you can kind of pinpoint the time when it happened, but it definitely played into why we're in such a shitty mess right now. And that's probably why Doug wanted to get out of town too.
Yeah. And locker room happy crap didn't help Carson Wentz's cause either. Whoever that leak was saying that he just throws the Zach Ertz cough, cough, Alshon Jeffrey. You know, I bet you that didn't help Carson Wentz and his ego and his performance in the end as well. And that, however small it might be in the long run, definitely contributed in my mind.
What of those factors would you say is the least that play, what should play into it the least of the ones that our guy just listed? My thought is injuries.
I'd agree. Definitely injuries.
You see, but the injuries is what quote unquote led to everything else. So you could argue that it was most. Carson Wentz doesn't tear his ACL, nothing happens. Like, he still should be a superstar here. He doesn't get a concussion against the Seahawks. Howie Roseman might not at least use that as an excuse to draft Jalen Hurts in the second round. Carson Wentz doesn't, you know, miss the year before when Nick Foles had to come back in with the back injury. Injuries, I think, have amounted to a lot mentally for Carson Wentz. And I mean, physically, he clearly wasn't the same player as he's been before. You'd hope the injuries he has sustained on the field aren't the reason for that, but I would argue injuries is Carson's biggest.
But don't a lot of quarterbacks sustain injuries? Like, I think a lot of top quarterbacks have gone through at least some types of injuries.
I mean, I know this is a really long time ago, but Tom Brady tore his ACL. Matt Castle came in, they still went on 11-5. Like, you know what I mean? Like, the next year, do you think they were like, oh, well, Tom Brady's never going to be the same ever again, so let's maybe keep Matt Castle as our quarterback? Like, they were not thinking that. I'm not saying Carson Wentz is Tom Brady by any means, but I think when Carson Wentz came back from his first ACL injury, I think he played pretty well. He led us to the playoffs when we were kind of a dog shit team with nothing around him.
You're skipping a year. He didn't play that well when he came back. That's the year he was 5-7 when Foles took over and led him to the playoffs. And then the year after that, when he was full recovery, okay, ACL with the JV squad, he threw for 4,000 yards and a great TD to interception ratio. But without the, I'm just using the injuries as a catalyst to everything else. Because if he doesn't tear his ACL in 2017 or get any of those other injuries, I don't think we're in this situation.
Yeah, fellas, what's going on? It's Pat from Westchester. Sitting at work right now. I just don't get why this city, more so the media, they don't want us to be happy as residents of the city. You know, the Flyers shit pump the Caps 7-4 last Sunday. And the night before, the Sixers get a massive win against the Nets, even though KD didn't play. That's fine. I don't care. And we're still talking about Carson Wentz. I want us to be happy. I want to turn on, you know, first time, long time, and hear Ron and Smitty smile. I want to be able to hear and see those smiles through the podcast. But this city just wants us to only focus on Wentz when there's other things to focus on. How do we stay positive as a city? How do we not let, you know, our love for the Eagles make us forget about the love we have for our, these other great teams in the city right now? Love the show, fellas. First time, long time. Peace.
I try to be – I can only be as positive as these teams let me. At the end of the day, I can't lie. I can't say that I'm fucking thrilled with the sixth overall pick in the draft because I'm not. Like, it's super disappointing. Like, the joy is disingenuous if you're always fucking happy through all the shit. I'm still trying to find a way to be positive. I'm still trying to look ahead. And even through the shit like we've eaten, I feel like I've been trying to stay on top of it. But at the same time, though, like we can't be positive unless they start making the right fucking decisions. Like, we can't be positive until we have some fucking championships around here. We have too much fucking, we're in too big of a market. We have too much money. We have too many teams. We have too many fucking cracks at the apple to fucking just be okay with, you know, with mediocrity. And I don't think it's mediocrity across the board. And there are moments of brightness, but like, I need more of it. It feels too good. I'm a fiend. I'm a junkie for those fucking good moments. And so I'm going to be on my team's ass until they have those good moments.
And this is also a football town. If the Sixers were in the Eagles situation right now, in the offseason, I don't think we'd be talking about it as much. But when it comes down to it, I mean, the Eagles, they're your buddy who was on the top of the world 3 years ago. And then you just watch your buddy just fall apart right in front of your eyes and just building himself down. And it's all his fault. And there's nothing you can do about it. You're rooting for him. You're doing everything you can to try to build him back up. You want to put him in rehab. You want to smack him around and say, come on, man, you have this. You have so many people around. You have such a great support system, but you're just a fucking loser. Just pick it up, man. I hate to see this organization and my buddy just be dragged to the seventh level of Dante's freaking inferno hell for no reason. For no reason. There's no reason they should be in this spot 3 years after they ascended into heaven for the first time ever.
Yeah, there's nothing worse than wasted talent. Nothing worse in life than wasted talent. And like in a city that should be able to acquire all these fucking brilliant minds from the top down, like we should be talented organizations from the front office to the fucking coaching staff that they hire to the players that they select. Like we should be able to foster talent. And it feels like we're wasting, if not the talent, the opportunity to have talent. And that's not a great feeling.
Who's fired up?
JJ Redick fucks.
Seconded.
Does he fuck that much more than Korkmaz, though? I just don't want JJ Redick to come into town and us to feel like we need to feed JJ Redick fucking an incredible amount of fucking shot attempts. You know, I want JJ Redick around. I like JJ Redick, but I don't want to give up too much for him. And I don't want to fucking cater to JJ Redick. Like, if he wants to come back, he needs to get in where he fits in, and that's being a member of the bench mob in a rotation with fucking Shake, Maxi, and Furkan at that guard spot.
Here's a question for you. When J.J. Redick left, he kind of trashed the city of Philadelphia on a podcast or something. He did not have some nice words to say about J.J. or about the city of Philadelphia and the Sixers. Do you want a guy back who has said those kinds of things?
If my memory calls correctly, which it usually doesn't, I believe that he was more or less upset about Brett Brown and not about the city or anybody else, but we'll do some double checking on that. And
I agree. I think he wanted to come back. I think he wanted a contract. I think he was upset the Sixers waited.
And also, I am trading Furkan for J.J. Redick straight up. Sorry, Furkan. Like, but here's your visa. Go have fun in New Orleans or wherever the fuck you want to get. Like, fine. See ya.
I also think that
Redick back as the sixth man off the bench, seventh man.
I think that Redick likes playing with Embiid too. I think that that's one of his favorite players that he's played with. And I think that they had a nice little relationship going on there. So, I mean, it will be helpful. He's a dead eye shooter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We were saying last year that if he was the sixth man, it would have changed the entire franchise, but love me some JJ. Why not? Okay. Time for a little bit of that fucking guy where we relive the memories of a specific Philly sports guy or girl that had something to do with, the Philly Sixers, Eagles, Flyers, or anything else Philly related, where you might not have thought of them in years, decades, generations, but the second you do, you'd be like, ah, I remember that fucking guy. So, Rune, what do you got first?
So, my that fucking guy is not that old of a fucking guy. He's actually only 30 years old, but in some ways it feels like he played in Philadelphia a long fucking time ago. This guy is a basketball player for the Sixers. He was actually a big man for the Sixers. And for me, no one encapsulates the process more than this fucking guy. He might have only played, I think he played for two seasons for the Sixers. He had a weird little career, but for one of the seasons, he was in 73 games and he started 32 of them. And he was our center at that time. Who am I talking about?
Henry Sims?
Henry Sims. That fucking guy. Henry Sims.
Fucking nailed it.
You nailed it right away. Henry Sims, 1 year in Philly, averaged 11.8 points a game.
I remember they were talking about him as like the center we could maybe like, oh, maybe we'll have him for a few years. Maybe he could be a good backup.
Henry that fucking guy.
No, the poster child of the process, arguably, some way, somehow. You can argue that Henry Sims is the person who changed.
On that note, we mentioned it last episode. I forgot we had Christian Wood come through the process.
Christian Wood, Grant for Detroit, who's absolutely tearing it up right now. Rashawn Holmes that we saw last night. A couple good players come through. And then the obvious, like Holiday. And I guess you couldn't say Michael.
TJ. TJ McConnell's fucking spinning.
Yep, TJ McConnell. But he left on his own accord. Like, I would love TJ McConnell back as a backup point guard. They need a backup point guard. But, yeah, Henry Sims. What a name. What a name.
I mean, it's crazy how many of those guys are still in the league, and Henry Sims is just completely out of commission. He's playing in Europe right now at 30 years old. He is playing where the fuck is he playing? Maybe in Spain or some bullshit like that. I'm not even sure. Henry Sims, though, is out here in the world. Yeah, Bologna. He's playing at Pompeia Bologna. So Henry Sims, 2012 draft, fucking an all-time process name.
John Kelly, who's your guy?
All right. I apologize if we've done this one before, but that just means you guys should get this name quicker. Okay, so this guy last pitched in an MLB game for the Phillies in 2007. I'm gonna wait 49 innings, 5.44 ERA, not very good, obviously. Guy's got six fingers.
Antonio Fonseca.
I knew that was gonna be.
I was just gonna say that.
But wait, did you know he won the World Series in 1997 with the Marlins? I did not remember that. He also led the NL in saves in the year 2000 with 45 and won the Relief Man of the Year. That did not. What Antonio did we get?
We got the washed up Antonio with his finger falling off. But no, Antonio Fonseca was a stalwart bullpen pitcher, played for the Cubs, had a couple good seasons. I was happy when we got him. He is the person who I reference when my wife is afraid that our child is going to be born with like extra fingers or something. I would love that. Are you kidding me? You know, didn't you get on that slider if you're giving me an extra digit?
Isn't that an advantage, having an extra finger when you throw the ball? That's an advantage, right? Like, that's
– I wouldn't call it a disadvantage.
I thought that he wore number 24 because he had six fingers on each of his hands and toes. So he had 24 total digits and he wore number 24. Am I making that up?
What a flex if that's true.
I might be making that up, but I'm pretty sure that that's true, though. I thought that he had six on each hand, six on each toes, and he wore number 24.
Confirmed. He does have six toes as well. Crazy.
Pretty See? Good.
All right, Booze. Good guy.
All right, so I'm going with the Phillies as well. We acquired this guy in 2009, was a big part of the 2009 run in the World Series. He was actually an all-star in 2009 as well.
Well done, yes.
Fucking nailed it. You guys are on today.
Well, I don't think people realize just how good of a first half Raul Banias had in 2009. People forget about Pat Burrell real quick.
Oh, yeah.
20 home runs in the first half.
He had 34 home runs that entire season. He, as a Philly, he hit 70 home runs in his 3 years with the Phillies and batted he had 260 RBIs as a Philly like that in just 3 years. Like, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, and he went on to be a hero for the Yankees. He played for the Mariners for like 20 years. And he was a frequent visitor to Grand Slam USA in Malvern. And all around good guy. All
Great cages. Guy. But circle of trust right here, fellas. Do we think that Raul Ibanez was on the juice? Because that dude was jacked as like an old guy.
Dude, I was just going to say, my memories of Raul Ibanez, other than that first half, was I would go to Mets games and fight with the Mets fans because they were all like, this guy's juicing. And then that quote came out, remember? He just said, if you want, I'll show you my stool. I think that was his after-game quote one time.
It wouldn't surprise me, I'll be honest with you. I mean, he was a big fucking guy.
Yeah, I'm not going to accuse anybody of doing anything, but, you know, if that helped him shack 34 home runs when he was like 38 years old, why not?
Doesn't bother me.
All right, I have a little bit of an off-kilter. Who's this effing guy? Let me try to get it. So my person was Phillies related. Was he a part of the organization? Some might say, some might not. He was a character, more or less, in the early 2000s of the Vet. I think it crossed over to the bank, but you can often hear him in the background. And he was
everybody hits.
Everybody hits. Woo!
Everybody hits. Woohoo, guy.
Everybody hits. Woohoo! Positive. Everybody hits. Woohoo! You can hear him on TV broadcasts. They started out ignoring him, then everybody brought into the everybody hits. I wonder what the everybody hits guy's doing now. He's not like that old.
So I don't even think I ever saw him, but I definitely heard him. And I heard that he used to like find the microphones in the stadium, or like he would find out where to be. So he was like closer. I don't know if it was like a certain camera had a mic on it, but I heard that he would kind of he would hunt them out. And I'm trying to figure out, was he like a derivation of, doesn't the Cubs have like a Ronnie Woo Woo or something like that? Like, did he do it to try and get on the broadcasts? Or there has to be something conscious about it, right? Or was it just organically happen?
I watched a little documentary on him today, and the documentary looks like it's from like 2004, 2005, because they're still at the Vet. So I mean, before 2003. He's like a middle-aged guy. He grew up going to the ballpark with his dad, and he just loves rooting for the Phils. Like, I don't know. True story, I was going to do Pistachio Girl of the mid-2000s or 2010 fame, and figured not exactly politically correct.
Well, was she a Nazi or something?
Yeah, I mean, she had her flaws. Of course she did.
That's quite a big flaw.
people don't remember, Pistachio Girl was in the stands basically singing about peanuts and Cracker Jacks and went semi-viral in the early internet days, probably internet 2.0. And a picture like Jess from New Girl just singing about like peanuts and Cracker Jacks in the stands. It was very endearing until somewhere or another came out she was a white supremacist. So Pistachio Girl got canceled before the woke culture got to her. So, and yeah. Rightfully so. What are you gonna do?
She was nuts. Damn. Good go around, fellas. Those were some nice blasts from the past.
All right, we'll wrap up real quick. So Flyers update, tied for the first in the East with 18 points. They're tied with Boston, who for some reason they just can't beat. Booze, you want to go off about the boys?
Yeah, I mean, that one caller left the voicemails right. Great fucking game. Way to battle back against Washington on Sunday, putting up a touchdown, which you love to see on Super Bowl Sunday nonetheless. But I can't stress this enough, guys. Their defense fucking sucks. Time after time, they leave Carter Hart and Brian Elliott out to dry. There's nobody big enough. There's nobody strong and physical enough. Ivan Provorov can't do it himself, and it's going to end up costing this team greatly. Now, on the other side, on the offensive side, James Van Riemsdyk is having a hell of a fucking year. Fourth in points in the league. He's now on a 7-game point streak, which is just crazy because I think a lot of people, when the Flyers brought him back, he didn't produce right away. And a lot of people were like, well, why the fuck do we bring the shell of James Van Riemsdyk back? Like, what the fuck is this? And now he's really playing. He's playing incredible and he's paying his weight. And you love to see it. It's just the thing that the Flyers, Chuck Fletcher, needs to figure out by the trade deadline is we need more defense. I don't care who you got to give up. Shane Gostisbehere can't be in there. He's too small. I mean, he hasn't lit up anything this year. I mean, he's played. It's great. Good for him. I'm happy to have him back. I love me some Ghost, but we need physicality, and there's none of that right now. It's going to end up costing the Flyers.
Booze, what happened at the end of that Bruins game the other night? I had the Flyers, or I had over 5.5 goals, and that's not how I wanted to get to
they shit the bed.
Goals.
They just shit the bed because it's honestly, you almost know now. Every time we go up two goals or a goal, you know they're going to blow that lead. And, you know, we've been playing pretty well in overtime, but that time, and also penalties, dumb fucking penalties, fucked the Flyers up dramatically. You know what I mean? Like, they could have brought that game against the Bruins to a shootout if they really wanted to, or continue to go further into overtime. But Scott Laughton hits a dumb penalty at the end of the game and go into overtime, man down, and they end up scoring on them. It's that things need to be figured out. They got to grow up a little bit.
Still the number one team in the East, though.
Tied with the team that we can't beat.
Yeah, with the fucking Bruins, who we just lost to twice.
Yeah. So I think overall, Alain Vigneault is going to ship this team up to where they need to be, and it is still early. Mind you, it's a shortened season, but I think if Chuck Fletcher knows what he's doing, which I think he does, we'll have some defense and some help by the end of the season.
I do think it's worth mentioning, by the way, I just read a damning article. I sent it to Booze. I'm worried about the rest of the NHL season. The Flyers are off this entire week. They've had every game canceled. It's not looking good. It's not looking good for the boys who 2 years in a row now are fighting for the top spot in the East, not maybe even the league. And they get this kind of luck. I mean, it's more important, obviously, that everybody's healthy, but it just sucks. It sucks that this COVID is affecting the NHL this way. It's affecting our Flyers. And I don't know how much hockey we're going to have. I don't know if they're going to be able to keep it going. Kudos to the NBA for figuring this shit out.
Yeah. Might happen in the NBA too, because they're not exactly in a bubble either. So who knows? The Flyers are off until Sunday against the Devils because of COVID, correct?
They can't even play against the Devils, it looks like, because the Devils have more cases than the Flyers do. I mean, the Devils had 14 positive tests last week, which is like their starting lineup, their goalies, their backups. Like, it's ridiculous that the Devils have been just completely plagued by COVID-19. And the Flyers had a couple of positive tests, Claude Giroux included. So now it's kind of like a waiting game, wait and see, and pray that we can get back on the ice in the next week.
Wrap it up with the Phillies real quick. Couple news and notes. Phil Gosselin, Melbourne Prep's finest, back with the minor league deal, which I don't hate. Kid slung last year when he was in there. And Bryce Harper personally brought his boy from the Marlins, his Las Vegas friend, Kintzler, over. A nice little bullpen arm help. He had like 12 saves last year. He's not the best, but he's not worse. He's definitely better than what the Phillies have in the bullpen. So the Phillies can bring over somebody like that a week just to fill in the bullpen. Okay, I'm happy.
You know where I'm at with the Phillies? I've been trying to diagnose my apathy towards the Phillies, and it's like, why do I not care more about the Phillies? Why am I not more engaged with a team that seems like they have a pretty good roster? Like, it seems like they're re-signed the guys that we're supposed to re-sign. Like, But and I think it comes down to how shitty the farm system is and has been. Their complete inability to fucking create any type of they're all basically to foster their own talent, to be able to build up their own players at the end of the day is what's keeping people from being excited about people for a long time. It's like JT, Bryce, fucking Didi, Segura, fucking all these position players have been brought in from other teams. So it's like, who is the last prospect that they drafted and have been able to turn into anything? Like, I looked at Keith Law's his rankings of the minor league systems. Our system is ranked 27th. That fucking sucks, dude. That's not fucking good. And we've been bad. We've had fucking bites at the apple. We've had a lot of cracks at it to try and get these top players, and we fucking whiffed. It's like that's something that if we look back over the last half a decade of what's really fucked the Phillies, it hasn't really been as much as them hanging on to the World Series guys from the half decade before that. I think that not drafting and not being able to capitalize on how shitty they got and fucking bouncing back from rock bottom as maybe the Sixers did, that's kind of been the story of the Philadelphia Phillies.
I mean, you're not 100% wrong, and it's not going to get much better under Dombrowski because, he's known for just completely decimating farm systems to bring up World Series champions or like the Tigers, people who get to the World Series. But the Phillies have a couple people here and there. Bomb at third base. Bomb at third base, who was exciting last year. He was up for Rookie of the Year. He's going to excel. Spencer Howard, who might not even be allowed to pitch, but like if they don't put a Steven Strasburg cuckold on him, like he's going to be half decent. And yeah, Reese, who admittedly I love Reese as a person. He needs to get his shit together behind the or in the batter's box, because like, he's not going to be around much longer if he's not producing the way he needs to produce at first base.
When are we going to be able to say that Mickey Moniak is a bust?
I wouldn't see Mickey Moniak. Who is a huge stoolie and I like, drafted at 18 years old during a draft that at the time did not have that Bryce Harper to draft at number one, that Strasburg, that consensus number one pick. So the Phillies like took a chance with Moniak to think that he would be a starter, not a superstar, a starter at the time, in which right now, like, he's not even a starter. So I think it sucks that he was drafted number one overall for him, because I don't think he was ever going to be that number one overall pick.
It also kind of put pressure on him, I guess, to kind of be that guy, even though because he was drafted number one overall in the MLB draft. Like, that puts pressure on you right away. As an 18-year-old kid, like, that fucks with your psyche a little bit.
Not saying he's going to be a Mark Appel, but, like, I think he could be a useful starter in the game one day, a la Shane Victorino, which, you know, would be half decent.
That would be awesome, but Shane Victorino was like a fucking Rule 5 guy or whatever, you know what I mean? It's not like we cultivated Victorino ourselves. I just am having a hard time feeling bad for dudes who were first overall picks and are getting paid fucking hundreds of millions of dollars and shit like that. It's just like, at what point do we like, you can't be the victim if you got what you worked your whole life for, like, and are in like a fortuitous enough situation. Like, I just can't give him and Markelle Fultz and Carson Wentz, like, I can't give him this leash. Like, you just have to perform. Like, it is what it is, or you just have to deal with the consequences.
And you're not wrong, but Moniak's situation was so unique because there was no, like, consensus. No more. If you look back at that draft, who's the pitcher from the Braves now that, like, is absolutely slinging? Ian Anderson, I believe his name is.
Soroka, too, right?
Ian Anderson, yep.
Yeah, Ian Anderson. Like, yeah, like, if you can look back at it, I'd get Ian Anderson in that draft. But at the time, there just wasn't that player who, like, you should and could have drafted. And yeah, I feel bad for Moniak. Hopefully he does end up being the starting center fielder for the Phillies, who, for some reason, or maybe not for some reason, but are thinking about possibly giving Odubel another shot.
But it's not just – I'm not even trying to single out Moniak. I think that we've had multiple top picks. Like we've had other guys at the top of the fucking, like Cornelius Randolph and shit. Like fucking there's been, I mean, how long ago was that? But fucking Greg Golson and shit. Like we've had a lot of fucking guys for a fucking long ass time. I guess Greg Golson was a long ass time ago, but still fucking JP Crawford, even like fucking what, like these dudes did not turn into the players that we thought they were going to be, who are our top overall draft picks.
Well, JP Crawford is having a kind of a resurgence in Seattle, and we did get Segura for him, so we did get a little bit of value. But yes, I agree, he should have been worth more. But Aaron Nola, also a top 10 pick. Don't forget about that.
Yeah, I don't know. Baseball is so tough because in any other sport, you're seeing a way faster return on your investment. But
plus, there's 20 freaking rounds. Like, I don't know what's going on there.
Yo, on a positive note, though, remember the name, Nick Abel, the pitcher the Phillies selected this past June. All reports are that the Phillies may have gotten a fucking steal at 15. I got my dynasty draft coming up in the next couple months. We're like a couple years in. I might take Nick Abel. I might, you know, take I'm Nick a homer, Abel. But let's go.
Greatest baseball name of all time. You look up his stats, or not his stats, his high school highlights. Kid's got some sauce on his pitches.
Let's go.
Sauce
Mickey
and
Abel. Hair.
Also, out of all the Barstool personalities, him and White Sox Dave hitting it off.
Nick Abel and White Sox Dave?
Why not?
Is that a good thing?
I don't know.
I don't know if that's a good thing.
All that I do know is like he slid into Nick Abel's DMs like before he was drafted because the White Sox were going to draft him or thinking about drafting him, and they communicated. And then after he was drafted, I slid into his DMs and got nothing. So
he's going to teach him how to throw 96, right?
And maybe Abel will teach White Sox Dave how to grow. Figure it out. All right, that wraps up first time, long time. A little personal note here for the listeners. We love doing this, but we are officially an unsanctioned Barstool Sports podcast. We're doing this for the love of the game right now. Nothing more. Nothing less. And if you really enjoy what you're hearing and what we're doing, we got guys killing it on social media. We want to do the more Philly stuff as possible. I don't want to speak for our own, but like if we could do Philly fucking stuff 24/7, like that'd be awesome. Problem is, again, we're unsanctioned. So please, by all means, spread the word around. Give 5 stars on the app. Subscribe. Because if we can show that, like, you know, this puppy can hit the charts without quote-unquote Barstool's help, it only helps even more. So if you want more Philly content, there's only so much time that we can devote, you know, outside the lines right now. So if you want more, show us, and we'll be more than happy to give more. So
yes.
We'll start doing – like we get to a certain amount, we'll just start doing live shows. We'll go to McGillan's. We'll go to Barnaby's Ashton. We'll go to Sidebar Westchester. We'll go to Miller's Ale House in the Northeast. We'll go to wherever you need us to go if this really gets legs. So please.
Some of the Barstool fun spots. We'll go out to Ye Olde Ale House or Billy Murphy's Tavern in fucking East Falls.
Don't
we'll
forget Pika's in Upper Darby.
Pika's, yes, all day.
Because, I mean, forget the short spots. We'll live in Seattle. We will live in Seattle if we need to.
If we must.
Yes.
I will do it if I have to.
John Kelly knows about those 302s.
Let's go.
All right. We'll see you next time. We'll hang up and listen.